The following program is rated TV-MAL. It contains strong language and is intended only for mature audiences.
TBS, America's number one independent television network, presents the following sports exclusive.
You're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And check out every episode of the show at basicallysports.tumblr.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike,
and this is Andy, and you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We is here.
You got a lot to dive into. This
yes.
This is a fun show, I think.
I want to run down Andy's Twitter description of the show tonight just to see how close we get to it. Tonight on At Basically Sports, our Twitter feed, Zach discusses life without first-round picks and with Matt Stafford. We sweat over the ice debuts of NHL reverse retro jerseys. Mike and Greg laugh in Florida as the Midwest is caked in snow, and we ignore whatever big sports event is about to happen next week. How accurate is that going to be, guys?
Yeah, probably about 85%.
Well, I think I can't speak for Mike because he's a little further south than I am, but there ain't nothing to laugh at in Florida today. It's colder than shit down here right now.
It's not Midwest cold.
It's close.
Is it like 60 degrees?
No, it's. I think when I got home, it was 48. So
yeah, it's fifth.
Yeah, we've hit the 48 range down here too.
And let me tell you, boys, in Florida, 48 is a hell of a lot colder than it is in Ohio. I don't know why that is, but it is. So we could probably rule that one out right out of the gate. But anyway, we got a lot of big news this week. Andy, tell us what's going on with our big media event. That's the word I'm looking for. Two words.
Yeah. So this show is not. We have at least. 535 episodes in. I don't know how many real have we had an interview really.
Ever? Was Tom O'Brien thing was on the logo cast.
Tom O'Grady was the logo cast.
Right? Oh my god, what a jeez. Anyway, go ahead.
So this show
we have the lounge reports, but I don't know if that counts.
No.
we had one interview that is, I think, the holy grail of Bass stuff, if you could find it, but it's not out there anywhere, was when the Admiral was on.
Yes. That was, God. I
missed that entirely. I was actually out of town on a job interview, so I couldn't be there for that show. And I was like, whatever. I'll just catch the recording when it's out. And then...
Yeah, then...
And no, I mean, it was not to gush over the Admiral too much, but it was like in the interview itself, I don't think was terribly interesting. He wasn't terribly forthcoming with information, but it was more of just like he sounded exactly like the Admiral, what you'd
should
expect.
Sound. Yeah, yes. Exactly how he should sound.
Yeah.
But for those who are more interested in the logo side of things and less about the logos forum side of things, you'll be very excited to hear that. I believe it'll be published probably the night of or the next day. Be February, probably looking at either the 18th or the 19th. We will be having a conversation with Chris Creamer, who's the founder and creator of sportslogos.net, as well as just the boards.sportslogos.net forum. And we will also be talking to Paul Lucas of UniWatch. So those two guys will be coming on to discuss. They have a new podcast coming up. I think the first episode is supposed to drop sometime this week. It's called Unified. And I'm looking forward to that. And Chris also has a book.
It's such an interesting pair because it's like – Imagine Marvel and DC teaming up.
I was trying to come up with a good analogy for what this is like, and that's a good one.
It's the mega powers.
Justice League and the Avengers both came together.
It's the mega powers. It's Hogan and Savage teaming up, and I think that I've heard them both speak, and I've heard them both kind of just do. Chris has like a YouTube channel and stuff like that. I'm just kind of curious to see who will stop the other one from making it like a 6-hour show, because I feel like they're both the type of people who just are so fascinated with uniform design and logos, and they have such a deep history that you know, it could just go on and on and on.
I mean, God, look at this show. I hate to see what we get into.
Yeah. I hate to big time everybody here, but I've interviewed both of them already, and and they are both very good, very concise. They're both going to be great, and I don't foresee any problems with this. I think that I also want to point out too that Paul Lucas is now following basically a sports show on Twitter, which I found bizarre, but okay, I'm glad he's here.
Well, shut and it I, down, guys. This is we mission accomplished. We're done here.
we get one or two retweets, and all of a sudden we're going to get some
that Tostitos sponsorship is finally within reach.
There we go.
Whoa, Mike, calm down. You're Tostitos. That's aiming a little high. Totino's is what we're looking for.
Totino's, right?
Yeah, very big. But yeah, so I mean, there's another.
I've got a bag of pizza rolls ready to go after the show. So,
all right, there you go.
Classy.
See, Totino's, if you're listening, just because Paul Lucas might have pointed you our way, we will pimp the ever living shit out of your product if you just throw a few dollars our way.
Oh, there's plenty of things that we pimp the ever living shit out of.
I made an anti Totino's joke once, and Zach acted like I just shot the Pope. So,
well, you basically had. We don't joke with the Totino's. It's just too risky. Oh. It might hurt us down the road.
It's been a long lasting relationship that we hope to further.
Right.
You know, I mean, this. But
then
go ahead.
No, I was going to say it. This Greg is straight out of fucking. This is straight out of fucking Letterkenny when Wayne and McMurray tried to talk to each other.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that, and you also kicked around the idea of getting someone on from, wait for it, folks, because this is big, the Omaha Beef.
Yeah, I honestly.
Can we get sirloin?
Well, we're going to try.
We're going to try. What I'm going to do, so I mean, I was, I had kind of a relatively busy day, but this week I'm going to make some phone calls, and I want to get a hold of the Omaha Beef. And by the way, I love browsing the Beef's website. It's beeffootball.com.
So good.
It's great. And I don't know how, like, who exactly, because it's a small operation. They don't have a whole ton of people, but I feel like I kind of want to go through the whole basically sports pantheon of people who would make interesting guests who may never have been on a podcast or been interviewed for anything, and just kind of get them on to.
Well, yeah. If you're listening, Omaha Beef, like, where else are you going to go? Come on.
Well, not only that, but the offer still stands. You just get us there. All we're asking for is just accommodations and travel expenses, and we will come out there and do a full show.
Maybe we will do a live show from an Omaha Beef game.
Free concessions, travel. Omaha's a long way from all of us.
We're not.
I want swag. I want to meet sirloin.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need a whole lot from the Omaha Beef. I just need I just need a sirloin.
An ownership stake. You know.
The offer still stands.
Little steak, an actual.
I think like the holy grail, like the ultimate holy grail for us, you know, as far as these sort of things would go, would be if we could somehow, as we're recording a show, send a live broadcast into a Glendale City Council meeting.
That'd be pretty good too. I think we'd commenting on it.
We'd have no listeners left by the end of that.
We wouldn't. But that's the thing, though. You see, we would enjoy that. No one else would. But then that's never stopped us before.
I mean, the caveat, of course, is it has to be a city council meeting concerning the Glendale Coyotes of Arizona, and you know, they're all ongoing saga. Because do they have a new arena yet? Or
no, they have a yearly lease that they
is
have.
That even, is that even a thing year. Anymore? I mean, really?
How embarrassing.
They literally have to renew their lease every year with the council.
By the way, we are now on our basically a sports show channel on YouTube, and I hope that didn't mess up anything with our normal viewers looking for it in the wrong place.
Well, yeah, we've the links are posted, so you know,
that's true.
People should know.
But let's get to talking about sports, huh?
Yeah, so Zach had an interesting Friday evening, I would wager, and I beat him. I beat him to the I thought it was Friday evening.
Saturday night.
Saturday night, whatever. So either way, I beat you to it by about 3.3 seconds.
Yeah. Well,
wow, Andy, with the school.
I was in shock. I was kind of looking at my phone like, wait, they really?
Yeah, because all I saw was because it came in. I wish there was like a timer with the exact second, but Zach, adios, Jared Goff, all caps, and then the Schefter tweet. And so Zach has been, and honestly, I'm so happy because A, I don't care about the Super Bowl at all. I know that Zach, or I know that Mike is probably really excited. Yeah,
go fuck yourselves, all of you.
but I mean, this is one of the biggest blockbuster trades in a long time. It is two number one picks.
It is the first and only, trade of number one overall picks, former number one overall picks,
really
in NFL history. Yeah,
I don't know. I find each sport kind of has its own. Culture when it comes to how trades work, how free agency works. And maybe I'm off on this, but I've always kind of viewed the NFL as not really a trade heavy league. Like it seems to me that hockey, the NHL is very trade heavy,
The NFL is getting much more trade heavy. It's happened a lot in the last several years. And one of the teams that's been in the middle of that is my Los Angeles Rams, where I say what you will, at least they're doing it. Like they're gonna go for the goddamn thing. They're not kind of trading around and getting rid of salary and maneuvering around the cap. They're not just bothering that stuff. They're making moves to get the team better right now, and they realize that maybe we're not so good at drafting first rounders, so let's trade first rounders for established products like Jalen Ramsey, like Brandon Cooks, like Matthew Stafford here now. So as my title says, and as the meme among Rams fans have been, the meme among Rams fans is on Twitter. Our meme is a picture of Les Snead's face, our GM, and just the words "fuck them picks," because what good are draft picks? They're not playing for you yet.
Let me provide devil's advocate position here. The Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah.
Different situation.
Well, no, but again, the Clippers thing the Clippers thing doesn't work if they lose. It's the same thing here. I'm totally all in on this right now, but give it 2 years, and if the Rams flame out in the wild card round in both those years, or don't win the division or whatever, then that's going to be a time where you look back at it and say, well, this didn't work out, did it? But they're going for it. And even with the Clippers, they're going for it. They realize that if we're ever going to win, it's got to be right goddamn now. They may not do it, but at least
there is actually precedent for this, Zach, for giving up all your first-round picks. It's happened a few times. But the most successful version of this were the 80s Washington 32s. They did not have a first-round pick for, I think, 7 straight seasons and won 3 Super Bowls in that time. So I think what the Rams are doing basically is they're saying, look, these first-round – I mean, unless you've got a surefire thing, and we see it every year in the draft. You see these guys that get drafted first and in the first round, you never hear about them again. They're thinking they can plug holes at the second and third round and fourth and fifth. And so if they do, they do. It's great. If not, well –
that's exactly it. Because the other thing is if the Rams – with the Rams being as good as they have been, like making the playoffs at least 3 out of 4 years – or going deep and winning a round at least. The picks aren't as good as you think they are, right? Yeah. It's not like they're not trading like top 10 picks for these things. They're trading in the mid to late 20s. And the Rams, on the other hand of that, they've kept their second round picks, and they've done pretty well. They've hit on some guys there, namely Cam Akers last year was a second round pick. And the other thing is people look at the whole list and like, oh my God, the Rams don't have first round picks for 7 years. Well, let's think about that. The Rams traded, 2 or 3 picks to trade up to get Jared Goff,
right,
who was the number one overall pick, a guy that took him to the Super Bowl, a guy that was successful for a couple of years. And so it worked out in that way. And in addition to that, they traded a first-round pick for Brandon Cooks, who, along with Jared Goff, got them to the Super Bowl. And in that way, if the Rams had won, nobody would give a damn about what the first round picks looked like because, well, it worked. And it damn near did. And so now you're doing this again where they traded another two first round picks for Jalen Ramsey, who turns out is pretty goddamn good. And he's worth, because you think about it this way, would you rather have Jalen Ramsey or would you rather have the two first round picks, which you could get a Jalen Ramsey, you could get a Jamarcus Russell, you know, right.
You could get a Jamarcus Ramsey.
Well,
right. But it's one of those things where the Rams know that they're trading late first round picks for established properties that they know are going to be good.
Right.
Like Jalen Ramsey, like Brandon Cooks was. Jared Goff is really the only gamble because he was the first guy, but they needed a franchise quarterback to establish them in LA, and it worked.
The counterpoint to that is that first round picks, yes, they are extremely overvalued, but a pick in the top five is considered by many to be just like this untouchable, unobtainium like material. But the main reason that first round picks have incredible value is that they will have a 4-year controlled right. contract with yep. a 5th-year option yeah. generally. So you get 4 to 5 years of potential MVP play from a young player in the physical peak of their careers that could potentially put you over the top for you to use cap elsewhere. Now the Rams obviously are playing the system the right way. They look at their first round picks as essentially very high second round picks and realize that the current first rounders are extremely overvalued, especially when it comes to a lot of quarterbacks sneaking up way higher than they deserve. And they're looking to win their windows in the next two years, probably next 2 years, maybe 3 years if they're being.
There's 2 years left on Stafford's deal, so
right. The contractual situation is going to come home to roost eventually, but the Rams are looking at it. I mean, they've got some incredible players. Their window is now. They have no.
Exactly.
I applaud the strategy and I applaud the boldness, but I feel like if there are Rams fans here in the next. And let's say 2025, 26, who are suddenly like, you know, crying foul that like, oh, well, you know, we didn't meet our goal of reaching a Super Bowl. It's like, well, you know what, man, you did what a lot of fans never get to do with your teams basically going all like truly all in. And that means a lot.
Yeah. Well,
the biggest mistake the Rams have made in all of this is you kind of hit on it a little bit, Andy, where the Rams were able to operate with how they did because Jared Goff wasn't being paid a whole lot of money. And because he was a first overall pick, so he did get a decent amount of money, but like he was still a controlled young contract. The problem was they probably extended him a few months too early. Because after his second year on this rookie deal, or third year, I forget, they signed him to the extension already. The extension hasn't kicked in. It'll kick in when the league year starts in March, and that's why it's a good thing they got rid of him now. They have to take on some dead cap money, but they're giving him off to Detroit, and Detroit can get rid of him in 2 years if he doesn't work out either. It kind of works out on both sides contract-wise.
Well, I have a question real quick
But they committed a lot of money to him, and that was a mistake only because you changed your mind like 13 months after you signed him to the extension. So,
but didn't did I read somewhere that one of the first-round picks was to get Matthew Stafford. The other first-round pick was to get the Lions to take Jared. Basically, they gave two picks. One was to get to get rid of Stafford, and the other one was to get Goff. Like, the Rams gave up the other pick to take Goff's money off their books, basically.
Basically, yeah. I mean, yeah. But the way the league works is you can't just get Scott free away from a big contract like that. You can't just –
No, but it certainly helped, didn't it?
Right. It helps out a lot. But I think the Rams are between Jared Goff and Todd Gurley, they have $22 million of dead cap space that they can't use, which not great, but it's better than having the $40 million.
Right.
I'm just gonna look. This is a really interesting situation because I think Matthew Stafford is still a great. Quarterback and
he's an upgrade on Jared Goff,
and he's definitely an upgrade on Jared Goff. And,
right?
and it's nice to see, you know, a good player from the Detroit Lions actually, you know, get a chance to continue his career somewhere else instead of just retiring.
Has that ever happened before?
Henry Sanders retired and Megatron retired.
Yeah.
Usually like, the creep beats the life out of you and you just quit.
Like so Matthew Stafford's actually getting a shot at like a playoff contender, which is, you know, good for him. Again, though, like my concern is that these, you know, you give up all these draft picks. We talk about how, you know, maybe draft picks are overvalued. I don't necessarily think that is the case. And it's not because, you know, oh, there are these sacred things that give you, you know, the best young players, because no, that's not always the case, but they are a very useful tool for, I guess, rejuvenating the roster every few years, you know, getting new blood in there, sure. And it's not even a matter where it's like a draft pick needs to be, you know, the next great superstar or they're a bust. You know, your first round draft pick could be just a solid player who you can rely on, who's never going to make, you know, huge headlines, but they provide a much needed service to the team. The point that I'm getting at is that, and I think this is something that, you know, Zach, you know, you yourself said, this is a case where it's a win now situation. And if they don't win now, if this doesn't work out, then, the team is going to, you know, then the team's going to be in kind of a long haul to get everything back up and running, to get everything to a point where
they'd be fine.
A rebuild can be made. And I'm not entire. And I guess my whole point is that, you know, for all the good things this trade does, you know, there is a downside that needs to be accounted for.
But here, my two counter arguments to that are, when it comes to team, let's think about a team that has been successful for the last 10 years, drafts at the end of the first round, but never hits on any of those draft picks. The New England Patriots,
right?
Mm-hmm.
They've been drafting 28 and higher for 15 years, and I can't think of three like first round picks that are like, oh, 100%. That's kept their franchise afloat. They get it done with depth and free agency and trade.
And Tom Brady,
yeah. But the other argument, I don't think they're that fucked long term, because here's the deal. Matthew Stafford's contract is 2 years. And so that means, like, we're coming up on the 2021 draft, so Matthew Stafford will be 2021 season. 2022 draft, no draft pick. 2022 season, 2023 draft, no draft pick.
Yeah.
So then let's assume that Matthew Stafford retires or leaves after those 2 years, or they don't extend them or something like that. Then the Rams are bad for 1 year. Guess when they finally get their draft pick again? That next season.
Well, Zach, so, you're assuming that they won't deal those picks. They would have dealt those picks now if they could.
True. That's also true, where they could just keep trading the draft pick because they don't really care about the draft pick. And if they can keep acquiring talent, I mean, it works. As long as they win and as long as they get what they want, then it's fine.
If
this situation goes sour, if they don't win, they don't succeed in the playoffs, if nobody's willing to trade with them, or they trade for – let's say even Stafford comes in and sucks, then it's like, all right, you made your shot, you got to live with it, and you got to reevaluate after that. But I think, all things considered, I
like the move.
Rams have a good body, and they're putting on they're exchanging their heads, if you will, from Goff to Stafford. And I think we all agree that Stafford, at the very least, won't turn the ball over as much as Jared Goff did. And that's kind of all the team needs to be successful. Think of how good they were this year in spite of Jared Goff.
Well, here's a question I have with regard to the first-round draft picks. And believe me, as a Browns fan, I know all about first-round draft picks. Any one of us.
Yeah.
Like, okay, the Browns have had, I mean, my God, you know, great picks for a very long time. The three that I can think of off the top of my head are Baker Mayfield, Myles Garrett, and Denzel Ward. I can't tell you who they drafted the year before because I don't remember. Or the year before that, because none of them – made that much of an impact. It's a crapshoot. Unless you get a stone cold lock like an Andrew Luck or possibly Trevor Lawrence this year, you just don't know. I mean, Mitch Trubisky, I hate to bring him up, Andy, but he's the perfect example. You know, Johnny Manziel was a first round draft pick. So was Trent Richardson. You know,
that's why it's exactly like I said. They're not trading these. They're not trading these draft picks for risk. They're trading them for established properties that you know are going to be good.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're trading a future.
Been good for a while. Like, because he's young. Matthew Stafford is a proven Fondy quarterback.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and you're basically trading future potential for guaranteed performance right now.
Exactly.
And you'll worry about tomorrow when tomorrow gets here.
Well, anticipate. It's like, you know, I mean, there's plenty of situations, which I'm going to cite later because I don't have them on the tip of my tongue right now, where guys have, you know, changed teams, changed uniforms, and suddenly they just can't play with crap.
Jim mentioned one in the comments, Herschel Walker going from the Cowboys to the Vikings was, you know, one of those.
Well, that was
busts. Those were one of those busts where the Vikings gave up a lot to get Walker, and it just didn't work out.
Created a dynasty in Dallas.
But listen,
it did. It worked out great for Dallas.
This segues beautifully into a side conversation of a similar nature that I want to talk to you guys about. Is this whole Deshaun Watson business? The very creepy and religious Gospel of Texans organization, this creepy Easter Bee ran mess down in Houston. They have said they're not going to trade him, but then, you know, they kind of listed their demands, essentially. He's being held hostage down there now. They are
probably literally, if you want the truth.
I mean, the claim right now, I guess, is that they say Watson, the starting entry to the conversation is 2 firsts, 2 seconds, and two young starting defensive players what they want. That's just to get to the table. Deshaun Watson is 25. He's what, 2-time Pro Bowler, and we just saw how much that the Rams paid to not only get rid of the contract but also get Stafford and give up a 26-year-old quarterback that's very much in his prime. Do you think that A, Watson will be traded, and B, do you feel like this will match or exceed like the Ricky Williams trade, that kind of haul? Is it going to be the biggest trade potentially ever? For a quarterback?
I think it's going to be because, like, okay.
Like, it has to be.
You said, Andy, that, like, the Texans have said that they don't want to trade him. That's kind of bullshit because Watson has said, like, he said he wants out. And as a team, you can't go forward with a star player who's just, you know, they've said they want out. Like that die has been cast. It has been established that he doesn't want to be there. So I think that at the end of the day, they are going to trade him because the alternative, you know, keeping him there against his will is untenable. So a trade will happen. I don't know with who, but a trade will happen. And when it happens, it's going to be the biggest trade in history, at least as far as, you know, quarterbacks.
Yeah, because it came out today that J.J. Watt also would like to be traded.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like people keep saying that that Watson really doesn't have any leverage. Because he is under contract and they don't have to trade him. They don't have to do anything he wants, which is true. But at the same time, like, what happens when the entire fan base revolts against what you're doing? Because it's not even – because it seems like the fans are all on Watson's side with this because they see that, yeah, our team has been mismanaged and they're trading away our star receiver for nothing. And now, you know, they've driven our quarterback out and they're hiring.
They're driving our best defensive player out.
I would think that most Houston fans would rebel against the ownership at some point.
Well, the funny thing about the trade with Watson, especially if it involves Miami, is that if Miami trades the first round picks they have, it'll be giving Houston back picks they originally had in the first place.
Right. Well,
which gives you an idea of how screwed up it is.
The Miami thing makes it interesting is in terms of when we're talking about what the assets are going to be moved around. Because if it is Miami, and you would assume that Tua would be going back the other way.
Yep.
And so does that mean that that's one less first-round pick that you have to give up? Is that less, you know, draft capital in total, whether it's second or third-round picks that are thrown in there as well you have to give up? Or is it Tua and two first-round picks? Tua and three first-round picks?
I think what you're looking – if I'm Miami, I go to them and I say, here's what we'll do. Because doesn't Miami have two first-round picks this year?
I believe they do. I believe they're top three. Yeah.
They have the one they got from Houston.
Yeah.
And then they have their own.
So you offer them Tua, the two first rounders this year, and I don't know.
Want two second rounders as well.
And, all right, one this year and one next year. I would do that deal. And I think the problem too. And this is just it creates a problem for Deshaun Watson, but the Rams, the Goff Stafford trade, pretty high price. And you're looking at that going, boy, if that's, they can get that for Goff or, you know, get that for Stafford, what can we get for Deshaun Watson? Mm-hmm. So it's going to make them, I think, if you can overvalue a talent like Deshaun Watson, and I think maybe you can in terms of draft capital, but I if I'm Miami, I think that Miami's the only one that makes sense. I don't think the Jets have enough to give.
No.
Miami does. He wants to go there. Would he be good all of a sudden if they got him?
So obviously there's a lot of people who are, you know, Bears centric who are just trying to figure out the Bears angle of this, because a lot of Bears fans, you know, want Watson desperately, despite the fact that it would be really embarrassing for the Bears GM to have to trade a wealth of riches to acquire a guy he probably should have drafted in the first place 4 years ago. Fucking moron franchise Bears. Anyway, the comparable trade to this, a lot of people have been pointing back to, again, with the Bears related, is the whole Jay Cutler trade back in 2009. I think it was 2009, early 2009, where the Broncos gave up Cutler in the fifth round pick for Kyle Orton and two first round picks and a third. And that
isn't
was
that kind of amazing, the difference in draft values from then to now.
Yeah, and I don't know what assets. Well, it's kind of like looking at the Ricky Williams trade, for example. I mean, it was an extreme trade. They traded their entire draft class to move up to to move up to what, the fourth overall or something like that, to take Williams. I mean,
I thought he went number. Did he go number one overall? I don't remember. But it was that. If there's a dumbest trade in NFL history, it's that one. Has to be.
That's probably the most.
Well, I don't know. That Dallas Herschel Walker trade was pretty dumb too on the Vikings' part. But
the Herschel Walker, the Ricky Williams thing, the Walker one makes sense because at least he was, you know, a proven commodity.
Yeah. You know, if we're talking about worst trades, I think the Ricky Williams one is.
It's dumber. Yeah.
I mean, poor Ricky Williams. That guy, I heard him. He was actually on ESPN earlier today. And he's, you know, I seem like he's doing fine. But, I mean, that guy was involved in two huge trade deals. But who could forget the
– And a stint in the CFL.
Yeah, and he was on the cover of I think it was it Sports Illustrated? It was the wedding dress?
Wedding dress.
Yeah.
And the coach.
Yeah.
He must have been smoking some fine weed that day when they said, here, we're going to put you in the dress. He's like, okay.
Did he ever get on the cover of Madden?
No, I don't think.
No.
He was a college player. Like the NCAA game he might have, I think. I'm not sure.
So he had a decent, you know, halfway decent career. He probably did more in Miami than he ever did in New Orleans. But
yeah, he was solid. I don't know if he was seven draft picks were solid, but he was solid.
No, but that's the thing is like because when it comes to the trading Deshaun Watson, let's say that the Houston Texans had the Miami Dolphins on the phone, and then they're talking to the New York Jets as well. And the Chicago Bears, and they say, and the Dolphins say, okay, we've got all these picks. We're going to give you all these picks. Take them. And then they say, well, we want more. And it's like, well, why do you want more? Like, we know that the Jets and the Bears can't match the package that we're offering you for this guy. And they say, well, because you have it. You know, like, basically, we have a 25-year-old Pro Bowl quarterback with a reasonably, you know, team friendly contract.
Yeah.
Pay us everything we want. Everything you have.
The way that I look at it is that there's, you should, if you have the opportunity to get a franchise quarterback, you do everything in your power to do it. But on the other hand, like if Houston wants to play that game and still be, they're going to get stuck holding the bag at some point.
Yeah.
Not only that, but he's not going to play. He'll just sit out.
Right. That, well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
He just won't, he's not going to play for Houston ever again.
No, that's done.
Like, yeah. He's not answering the phone calls. There's no communication with them whatsoever. He's not playing. So you can keep, you know, playing for your king's ransom. And if nobody gives it to you, and if Deshaun Watson doesn't play, then, and everybody's pissed at you, then what do you do?
Well, this just goes to a deeper problem. Andy brought it up when we first talked about this topic, about how the ownership or management of the Texans, it seems like incredibly weird. Not in this isn't just a case where this is a poorly run team. Like, there's some weird cultish sort of behavior going on here. The whole, you know, Bill O'Brien, I'm beginning to see, was not the problem so much as just a symptom of an ownership group that desperately wants things done a certain way and is going to move heaven and earth to do it, even if it's not in the franchise's best interests.
What are they trying to be, the Liberty University of the NFL or what?
Basically, yes.
Well, that's that shit never works, trust me.
People are saying that essentially Easterby has basically infiltrated and runs the team now for all intents and purposes down there in Houston. And people have speculated online that it wouldn't be a shock if McNair turns up dead in a few weeks with a, you know, recently changed will that gives the team to Easterby to run. But I mean, he's, you know,
on the air situation.
Yeah. I guess he's been texting players' mothers after he doesn't get calls back from his agents.
Yeah. Some weird stuff shit like that going on there. Yeah.
Like it's very much. Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I know Mike and Greg probably seen this, but the urinating tree video on Houston.
Yeah. What was it? The succubus?
Succubus, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, like Houston, and it seems more and more every single day, whether it's baseball free agency now or what's happening with the Texans, like, holy crap, this city somehow sold its soul to get that one tainted World Series. Everything that's happening to that.
Especially, you know, Harden wearing a fat suit to get off of the. Well,
yeah,
the Rockets.
Like, Harden's off the Rockets, and now the Rockets are going in the tank, and the Astros are losing guys like Brantley and Springer, and
Springer wanted out so bad he went to Toronto.
Are imploding as a football team before our very eyes.
The Texans are self-immolating. It's just it's so strange how that whole city's sporting culture evaporated in 4 years.
You don't fuck with the baseball gods. It's that simple.
It's so strange. But
they're learning the hard way now that you just don't do that.
And not that we give a damn about the Houston Texans, but like
– I like their helmets.
they have very good uniforms. I'll give them that.
They've been okay. But like otherwise, they've been such a nothing franchise since their inception.
Well,
if this is how this guy really wants to do this, then he's going to learn really quickly that that's not how you make a successful franchise in the NFL.
No, you don't call players mother. That's not how you run an NFL team. Like these aren't college kids. These are grown men, professional athletes. Like, treat them as such.
Yeah, right. But he's probably a good religious man. And
I'm sure that'll win you a Super Bowl.
Well, it's like
call their mamas. That'll help. You know,
it's when you bring in a college coach and they don't work in the NFL because they can't treat these grown men like children.
Yeah,
This isn't even treating them like college age kids. This is
high school. Bullshit.
I would argue it's not even a high school thing. Yeah. This is
like grade school. It's like you didn't call back the principal called. You didn't call back, so I'm calling your mother.
All the things that you're that we're saying, Andy's saying about like the views of this guy, it really does sound like some church league football team where, like, you know, Billy said a naughty word when he got hit the other day. We just can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
There was some blasphemy. I did hear some blasphemy during practice.
So are we gonna have a prayer group on the sidelines for Texans games?
I hope so. You know, I would, that would be the greatest thing ever. Come on.
I hope that every player that wants to gets the hell out of there and just leaves that franchise in ruins.
Like when both JJ Watt and Deshaun Watson are like, no, like we want to leave.
Especially JJ Watt, who has literally given
everything.
Every ounce of blood and tendons in his body to play for this stupid football team.
Mm-hmm. He's
the absolute emblem of a guy that you want at the front of your football team. When he finally says, yeah, I don't know if this is the place for me anymore, then that should really tell you what's going on.
Well, the whole thing is, I mean, Zach, you mentioned that they've always sort of been a nothing franchise, and that is true, but like, there were a number of years there where they seemed like they were on the cusp of breaking through. And
no, I picked them to go to the Super Bowl one year on the old football show.
Sure, they were looking pretty good.
And of course, they never really got through that level. But like, they were right on the cusp of maybe building something. And it's just so odd to see this team that, you know, seemed to be moving at least in the right direction is now, you know, within like 2 years going from, oh, hey, they could be a playoff dark horse to, like, this is garbage. They're being run by, you know, the fucking, you know, local pastor, and now everyone wants to leave.
Yeah.
Man.
Go ahead.
The players talk, man. Like, it doesn't take long for things to turn sour.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I think there's a big difference between, like, doing what, for example, like the Bengals did for a long time, or kind of what the Bears are doing now, to where it's like, hey, you know, decent market, come get paid. We're professionals. We may not win all the time, but we're professionals. We will, you know, we'll get you through to either your next franchise where you'll actually win, or we'll give you a nice, comfortable career, and the team will give you free hamburgers after you retire, stuff like that. But like when it comes to just the poisonous, like if your ownership makes your experience like a living hell to the point to where, like, not even Jimmy Jones level, like Jimmy Jones, he knows probably when to stop. Whereas this Easterby guy is, when you're texting or calling people's mothers, people's parents, because they're fucking players and their children and their agents won't return their calls, maybe you should like stop and look in the mirror and realize, you know, maybe something's fucked up here. Maybe something's very fucked up. Also, nobody's going to come there because people
are
people.
No.
Because like I say, their agents are going to tell. They all share collective agents to where
their agents, JJ Watt's agent's going to tell his other clients, like, yeah, no, stay clear,
stay away.
Beyond football. If you are in any job anywhere, and your boss is calling your mother,
oh, I'm done. That's it.
Yeah.
That's when you say, yeah, you know what? No, thank you. I could go do this job somewhere else where it's not so weird.
The thing about it, right, is that I would rather play for a team like the Bears. And I know Andy, you know, earlier today, he called them like dumbass franchise. Like, but no, I'd rather play for the Bears because at least they're just merely incompetent. And it's like, it's a well-meaning incompetence where it's like, you know, they're trying their very best. They just don't make the best decisions. But, you know, they are at least a professional football team that acts like a professional football team. And maybe you're not going to win a Super Bowl, but, you know, you can have a nice career there. And,
well, not only that, but even if they're not very good, you're still a Chicago Bear.
Yeah, one of the legacy franchises. And right. You're wearing one of the best uniforms in football. So,
damn straight.
Yes.
So, but like, if you're – it's like I'd rather be in that situation as, like, an athlete than in, like, this fucking Handmaid's Tale cultist bullshit that seems to be going on in Houston right now. So
– But that's the thing. That's why, about,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the only thing I think the Bears, that's the advantage they have by having a trade piece to send back to Houston. Nick Foles is the dark horse here because that guy can quote the Bible. So I think that if they can, like, if they really harshly sell, like, if they say, like, you know, Nick Foles, he leads, like, prayer groups. He does, like, he can quote these Bible passages. They'll be like, oh, my God, we'll give you three first round.
Well, Nick Foles will quote scripture on the way to the Super Bowl. There you go. Yeah.
Nick Foles will be, yeah, so all of a sudden now you're getting Deshaun Watson and a couple of picks.
They'll give up everything to get Bible-thumping Nick Foles.
In the sphere of Nick Foles and in the sphere of what Mike, you were just saying about professional football teams acting professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys heard the story of new Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni?
No. As far as bullshit coach hires have gone, I've just kind of been captivated by the Detroit situation. I haven't looked at anything else.
First off, the Eagles interviewed him while he was on vacation. And because he was on vacation, he didn't wear a suit to the interview. So I guess the Eagles that said, oh, well, we'll make you comfortable. We'll also wear t-shirts during the interview.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That is amazing. That's fucking amazing. Then,
I don't know if you saw his opening press conference, but it was incoherent.
Is he going to give Dan Campbell a run for his money on the racist?
Is this going to be another guy who just
Dan Campbell, give him all the shit you want for that stupid speech. Cause it's stupid. But he at least had a vision. Nick Sirianni went up there and mumbled his ass through, like, well, our football team is going to be a smart football team because we're going to have guys that know what they're doing. And
guys
that know what they're doing are going to be smart. And we're going to implement systems that are going to be easy to learn. It's going to be difficult for the opponent to see what we're doing. It's going to be confusing to the opponent, but it'll be easy for us because it'll be easy for us to learn and hard for them to know. We're going to have smart people that are putting together a smart football team because they're smart folk. And go Eagles.
Andy said, that dude's fired. The guy's got to be fired.
let me see if I can find the press conference.
And all the while, Eric Bieniemy is still without a job.
How is Eric Bieniemy still not have a job? Well, like, this motherfucker.
So, let me clarify to you why Eric Bieniemy doesn't have a job. Besides the fact that we discussed that he's black, and besides that he's got a, like, ancient criminal history or whatever. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason I think he does not have a job is because he's simply too straightforward. He's too candid. I think that there's a lot of – I think the Detroit's hire Campbell goes well outside of the norm for many reasons, but namely because Campbell just kind of says whatever the hell he wants. And he's going to say whatever he wants, and I think that the NFL generally, on the whole, is very scared of that. And that's why we, you know, slanderously predicted that he's going to drop some racial slur or homophobic slur.
He'll call one of the female refs a lesbian or something.
Yeah, or he can hit the trifecta and hit all three.
All three in once.
Single press conference, just go off on a you know, lesbian
well,
black
about, referee. The thing about Campbell is going to be like, it's not even going to be said in anger. It's just going to be like, he's just going to like slip. It's just going to be matter of fact. Yeah.
He'll probably have a play aimed with a slur in it or something like that.
We were doing fine until that dyke ref just, I don't know what she was thinking. That'll be it.
But that's the thing, is I think Bieniemy people are generally afraid of that is part of it. But I think so. That's one speculation. That's something I read earlier today.
I mean, why? Okay, but my question is this. It's like we've had a lot of coaches that are just come right out and say what they're going to. Like Bruce Arians is a guy that doesn't really pull any punches. But
Bruce Arians, just to further that point, this will give you an idea of what I'm talking about here. So, and again, I'm sorry, I feel like I've talked about the Chicago Bears like 12 times tonight. But the Bears, for example, many years ago, they interviewed, their GM interviewed Bruce Arians for their head coaching position. And they also interviewed a guy named Mark Trestman. And they decided instead of going with the, you know, more unpredictable, not sure we want to go that direction, Bruce Arians, who could possibly, you know, be overcritical, say something we don't know. They went with Mark Trestman, who's very much a, you know, like very similar pastorally, just we're going to grow the man. We're going to like deal with these people. We're going to deal with players as people first.
Was it true he only thought that there were three downs, like in Canadian football?
I don't know. I have tried to purge as much Mark Trestman from my memory as possible.
Oddly enough, so have I, because he was the Browns offensive coordinator, and it was terrible.
But Arians went on to – sorry, one more thing. So Arians goes on to Arizona and then Tampa Bay. He's had a nice career. Mark Trestman was fired. He went to Baltimore. Now he's in CFL. I don't know what he's doing. Fuck him.
No. He's not in the CFL anymore. Last I heard, he was the coach for the Tampa Bay Vipers in the XFL.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot he did that. Shit.
Yeah.
But then the Bears also had a situation to where they're looking to hire a new general manager. And so they interviewed who turned out to be the general manager of the Colts, whose name escapes me at this moment. Doesn't matter. Anyway, they interviewed that guy, and he basically said, "Your organization sucks. I want to make some big changes and turn this franchise around." And they said, "We're going to go with this other guy, this kid from New Orleans." And the Bears have been what they've been for the past few years, and the guy in Indianapolis has done a great job turning that franchise around. So there are certain teams who are willing to take a risk with people's words and people's demeanor and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's many other franchises that are not. Sorry. Huh. I feel like I talked for like 2 minutes straight there. So.
No, but with the enemy, though, I'm just thinking, like, you know, Bill Belichick's not known as a warm and fuzzy,
Yeah. But you can do that when you win. You know, I mean, when you win, you can have license to do pretty much whatever you want.
Eric Bieniemy is about to have 2 Super Bowl rings, so I think he's going to have a little bit of cachet to. I just don't get it. I mean,
you think so?
I'm positive of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so hold on. Zach sent me a clip here of the this press conference here. I feel like we should enjoy it together.
It's really like apparently the whole press conference was not really anything to write home about, but this was the clip that got circled around of people being like, this guy?
All right, here we go. We ready?
Yeah,
I'm ready to go.
Go.
To me is that we build a smart football team, that we have a smart football team here. And I know we have the people in place to do that. The first part of that, the first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're going to have systems in place that are easier to learn. No. All right, complicated to the defense or offense that they're going against, or the special teams group they're going against. Easy for us to learn, because when we can put that, when we can learn our system and we can get good at our system,
when we can then learn and be good. We'll be smart.
Thinking equals talent takeover, but we need to have systems in place, and we will have systems in place to do so.
Oh my God!
That is the perfect example of saying a lot and saying nothing at the same time.
We will be smart because we will know what to do, and smart people know what to do.
I love that. The first thing about being smart is knowing what to do. Good. Thank you for that.
The people of Philadelphia are going to murder this guy.
Oh my God! How did he get through an interview with an NFL team to get the job?
He was on.
They all wore T-shirts.
He was on Frank Reich's staff in Indianapolis, and Frank Reich. And he also worked with Frank Reich when they won the Super Bowl in Philly. So he had a connection to the organization already.
He sounds like a moron.
Yeah. I don't know.
I've seen like really bad high school teachers that don't know the first fuck all thing about anything they're trying to teach do a better job of explaining themselves than that. That reminded me of like a bad, like when I covered high school football, you always had 2 or 3 teams that were good and everybody else was just the dregs of the league. You know, they would win one game if they were lucky. That's the coach they always had, was that guy. That was like the guy that coached the 1-9 team that scored 14 points all season. It was that dude.
We're gonna have systems in place with smart people who are smart, who know what they're doing because they are smart people, and the systems will be there.
Systems in place that are easier to learn. Complicated to the defense or offense they're going against, but easy for us to learn because when we can learn our system, we can be good at our system, then our talent can take over. Basically, we don't want our players thinking too much.
You wait and see. That fucking Jamoke's going to win like 4 straight Super Bowls and make us look like idiots.
No, certainly.
I am confident that won't happen.
No, that guy's not winning anything. He's fired within 2 years.
Although, could you imagine an NFC title game between that guy's Eagles and Campbell's Lions? Like,
well, that was going to be my next question. Who would you rather have as your football coach, Nick Sirianni or Dan Campbell?
Dan Campbell. Just for the laughs. Come on,
yeah, just Dan meme, Campbell meme would be fun. Yeah. Give me Campbell all day long for that. That is unendurable.
If I've got to watch the world burn, I want to be entertained while I'm watching it. That's all I'm saying.
So you'd rather have your kneecaps bitten off than be a smart team?
Right.
I
mean,
you know, there's only I get it. You know, when it comes to, you know, I'm not a, you know, professional media person for the National Football League. I can't imagine being a local beat writer or reporter for Philadelphia, and you go, this is the first press conference of this guy's potentially long career, and he gives you that. And that was just 40 seconds. Like, can you imagine the full, probably that close to an hour?
He opened the press conference with like a list of 5 core values for the team, and that was one
Fuck
of
you.
Them. So that was like,
that core value bullshit. That's high school nonsense.
Yeah,
all right.
Let me see if I can pull it back up.
That's what you do in high school. That's what you, I mean. Maybe you can get away with that in university. 5 core values. These are grown men, professional athletes. Jesus Christ.
The 5 core values were connections. He wants players to connect with the players, coaches connect with coaches, players to connect with coaches. And if you care about the other people on your team, you'll push harder for them. Okay.
Second grade?
That's the first one. Competition is the second one. Because teams that compete hard every day are better positioned to win close games.
As opposed to the teams that don't compete? I mean, name one team in any sport that doesn't compete, that just says, fuck it, we're not even going to try.
Arguably the Jets.
Okay, well, besides them. even their lack of competition, they still accidentally fucked up and won twice. I mean,
they couldn't help themselves.
We're going to compete. Guys, every time you step on the field, you're competing. Maybe not as well as the other team, but you're competing.
He wants them to have accountability. He wants them to be a smart football team. Sake. And they have to work on the fundamentals. It's not just about having ability. They have to be in the best position to win one-on-one matchups with proper technique and fundamentals. This is a high school football coach.
I mean, this is a great school coach.
Is he worse than David Culley?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know who? First of all, when I say David Culley, do you know who I'm talking about?
I know he's the Astros' new coach, the Texas coach. He's a Andy Reid disciple, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but I think maybe
Andy Reid's first disciple by his age. But
he's 65.
If you put all of the new coaches that have been hired this offseason like in front of me right now, I wouldn't tell you which one was David Culley.
Wait, is he Andy Reid's disciple or one of Jesus' original disciples?
Let's see. I would recognize Dan Campbell because he'd be yelling at me and calling me racist for me, even though I'm white.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer, I'd recognize.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Which has gone just completely nobody's.
Because whatever the fuck the Eagles and Lions are doing, like Urban Meyer just seems like a normal hire. It's like, yeah, we just hire this.
A very successful guy that the Jaguars came and said, "Hey, we'll give you a ton of money to coach us," and he said, "Sure."
And he said, "Sure." And it's like, "Oh, okay." So the football team hired a football coach, and that's just fucking boring. When we can have bite off their kneecaps, and the synergy of the smart people with the systems will be amazing when the smart people arrive to do the synergy.
And the systems. Don't forget the systems.
And the systems. Yes.
Yeah. And the more I read about this Robert Saleh or Saleh guy, Saleh, who's now the Jets head coach, I feel like I would probably give them the benefit of the doubt. It'll be fine. You know, I don't think it'll be great, based on
interacting with him as a guy that's in the NFC West all the time, he seemed pretty damn competent to me. But
okay. Yeah, his name was on short list for a couple years there, too.
I mean, not a surprise. The only thing that I feel for the guy, because, like, it's the Jets, so he's going to have a lot of work to do. But if they give him the runway space needed to actually at least give it a good shot,
I don't think they're going to be playoff ready or anything next year, but I think that they had more talent than they had talent. They just didn't seem to know how to coach it or put it together because of Adam Gase. But I think that team's probably closer to being solid again than we think it is. And he might be the difference. And if they can get a quarterback or,
Their problem is that they got to get those Bills moving because the Bills are already there in the division.
Yeah,
it seems like the Dolphins are right around the corner, and so now you're going to be in a 3-team race with Bill Belichick always lurking in the shadows.
What about this? So the Falcons hire this guy Arthur Smith, and apparently he's a top hot coaching candidate.
Sure. Never heard of him.
I never heard of him. And he, I thought they hired the owner, the former Arthur Blank. And I was like, Arthur Blank, I thought he was dead. Like, he's like 107 years if old
I
or something.
If I can teach Mexicans how to sell a hammer, then I can quit the football team.
God.
But I mean, before
people yell at me, it's because he owns Home Depot. That's the joke. It's a joke.
No one's going to yell at you. We're fine.
We are not that kind of person. Don't worry about that, folks.
I know. I'm talking about the internet. The internet's always listening, Andy.
Don't cancel basically sports. Don't cancel.
They're not going to. They can all go fuck off. I won't let that happen. I may be talking by myself, but I won't let it happen.
The Chargers go with Brandon Staley, who's a guy. Who's what? He's a Rams coordinator, right?
The Rams defensive coordinator for 13 months.
Hey, at least he's got some experience.
And he knows Sean McVay, which is always a good.
And he gets to keep his parking spot. So.
And not only that, yeah. I hear he's got like three systems that he uses, not just one, but three.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, he uses the Vic Fangio defensive system, which confuddled McVay's offense.
The Vic Fangio defensive system sounds like something they sell at midnight on an infomercial.
Yeah, right. Well, Sean McVay hired him specifically because he's like, you play defense in a way that frustrates my offense, so that means that you're a good like chess master to go against. And then he was only there for a year.
For three payments of $39.95, you can get the Vic Fangio defensive plan.
Yeah, it's like four VHS tapes that you get over the period of a few weeks.
Yeah, I feel like the problem is these guys. There are a bunch of guys that we don't know, or I think in the situations of Staley and maybe Saleh too, maybe that's they might just be like the guys that are awesome coordinators but not good head coaches. There's no way to know.
It could be just a trend, like with this hiring young, basically young unknown coaches, just giving them a chance to basically say to grow into the job.
And, so, of course, with that being the trend, Houston goes out and hires a 65-year-old guy.
Well, Houston is the like bald, like not just bald like from age, but bald from like we're not even going to try and hide it. We're basically just going to hire friends of the former Patriots pastor. And load up on just a bunch of trash and peddle it out there every few months for Houston fans to pay season ticket prices for. So have fun, Houston, bunch of assholes.
The only thing that bums me out about this is that they're not going to be the automatic. There's no more Houston Texans Bowl now with the playoffs. We have to give that honor to someone else. Or should it always be the Houston Texans Bowl?
It's the end of an era.
Yeah, it really kind of is.
Don't worry, the Bengals will be there in a year or two to take the mantle. It's
fine. Yeah, then it'll be the Bengals Bowl.
The Joe Burrow Bowl.
Should we give any time to the Super Bowl?
Well, yeah, a little bit.
You know what? I'm just going to say yeah, because on one hand, I get why, you know, maybe you're not excited. But here's the thing. One, and again, y'all can check the record. I called the Bucks as my team before anyone was even talking about Brady going to them. And on top of that, like, this is the first time I can actually say, like, you know, my favorite team's going to the Super Bowl. So
y'all
can take your haterade and shove it because I'm excited.
It wasn't meant to be an attack on you, Mike. Oh, there he goes. All right. Well, you did what you had to do, Greg. You got canceled, Mike. I'm sorry.
We canceled you for a second there.
Well,
show you where the real power is here.
The point is that on a certain level, it's like, I don't know, people bitching about it's like, oh, Tom Brady, and I'm just kind of going, yeah, you know what? I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good time. So.
Mike, I heard that somebody slipped a strawberry into Tom Brady's water. So
that was me. I did that.
Well, I mean,
while we're there, why doesn't he eat strawberries? What's the point?
I don't fucking know. I haven't read his book.
It's the sugar.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead, Mike. Sorry. I just had to ask.
I haven't read his book, but At the end of the
day, I gotta find it. And there's a guy I follow who's a CBS sports writer, Pete Blackburn. For the last week, it finally ended for him yesterday. But he tried the TB12 diet for a week and wrote about
and
it
and died.
So,
but I don't know. I guess the point that I'm making in all of this ultimately amounts to, it's like, I don't know what y'all expect out of me, because it's like, I don't know, the team I like made the Super Bowl. Am I not going to be happy about it?
No, of course. We just, you know, just giving you crap. No, like, the most amazing thing, I think, for you as a newly branded Buccaneers fan, Mike, mm-hmm. is if they follow all of our advice and the advice of this Buccaneers USA Today column I saw yesterday, that the Buccaneers should never change uniforms ever again, because this is they only make Super Bowls in the first year that they wear these or the first couple years they wear these jerseys. So,
well, but wait a minute. That wasn't okay. Well, it was within a few years.
Was it
USA Today that erroneously said this was the first ever color matched Super Bowl? And then
a lot of people said that
it turned out that one, it wouldn't be, and two, it's not even a color matched Super Bowl because the Reds are different.
The plebeians, Mike.
The plebeians who don't.
The civilians.
They don't know their Pantones like we do.
The civilians were all out there going, "Oh my God, it's the first time ever that both teams have the
they
primary
both wear
look.
Red."
And it's like, it's no. Like,
morons, the 49ers and Chiefs played last year.
And all of us in our world were like, look at these fucking morons. They can't see the difference in those two Reds. Come on.
But, I don't know. As far as the only thing I will say about the Super Bowl, as far as like actual, I guess, analysis, is the Bucs played the Chiefs close in the regular season.
Wasn't also, it also the game that Tyreek Hill had like 700 yards in the first quarter?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And the Chiefs only won by like a field goal. So, well. I guess my point is that the Saints beat the crap out of the Bucs twice, and the Bucs beat them. So I'm not saying the Bucs are going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm saying I think it's going to be a close game. I think it will be closer than some people think, and that's going to be that. I think it'll be cool.
No. You have to make a pick with a score like everybody else does.
Okay.
Purposes, the spread of the game is 3.5, with Kansas City being the favorite.
As far as I don't know, picking up, I'll make a pick, and the pick is I'll just pick the Bucks, because I've picked them so far, and they've won of the three games they've won two that I didn't think they'd win, so I'll stick with them. As for the score, I hate picking scores, but if you're going to make me, Tampa is going to win by 10.
10?
We need a... All right, fine.
Okay, fine.
30
to 40, Tampa.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
Tampa dropping 40. I think we've talked about the actual football of it all for a while. I think we all know who these teams are and what they do. I hate Tom Brady, but that's not why I'm not picking him. I just think every time I've seen the Chiefs, I say, God damn, every single one of their players are so fast. Yeah. So I'm going to go Kansas City, 35-24.
Andy?
I'll go Bucks. 30,
God, excuse me.
Bucks sneeze. I don't know. Bucks 35, Chiefs 31.
Oh.
I'm going to go with I've learned my lesson. I will never do it again. I'm not picking against Tom Brady. but that man, see, that my thing
he
is that
today he's going to play until he's 45, so you'll have other shots.
Oh, fuck him! I gotta go. Yeah, all right.
Or no, he's going to play past 45. I think
that Bucks defense is really good. okay? And they're playing at home, literally at home. And the Chiefs don't come in until, what, Saturday?
Yeah.
And I know the Chiefs are really good. What's the weather supposed to be here Saturday, Mike, or Sunday? Do you know, Mike?
So, interesting fact. I looked at this is going to be the last Super Bowl Tampa's ever going to get because there's a 50% chance of rain. So
that won't stop anything. I mean, the Colts beat the Bears in the rain. I mean, it's
my heart wants me to pick the Chiefs, but my head wants me to pick the Chiefs. But I really got this feeling that I don't know. I think Brady cements it. I think he finally just puts the last dagger in me with this game. I'm taking in a lower scoring game than people think it's going to be. Tampa Bay 28, Kansas City 24.
Well, the thing about I don't know. So the one thing I'd say, I guess, I don't know if you want to do Mike's keys to the game, but if Tampa is going to have a shot here, like what they've got to do is as good as the Chiefs are, I've noticed every time I've watched them that they tend to go in spurts, like they will actually kind of play very, very low key football until they, you know, eventually they just decide, oh, okay, we're going to ramp it up. And so if the Bucs are going to have any shot at actually beating them, then I think the key is going to be the second quarter, because I have noticed that, you know, a lot of times, and yeah, this is by far not a scientific analysis. I haven't actually cataloged any of this, but I've noticed that the Chiefs, you know, spurts tend to occur when they do occur in the second quarter. Like, you look at a box score where the Chiefs will put up like 45 on a team, and it's like 7 in the first, like 0 in the third, 3 in the fourth, and then like 35 in the, you know, in the second. Like, they just kind of go off. They just kind of just go off in the second quarter. And of course, you know, that doesn't mean that they can't score in any other periods. But I think that if the Bucs can find a way to weather those storms, then they'll be in a good position. So, like, they just need to. I think they need to come out, like, just absolutely uninhibited and play, you know, foot to the throat defense against that Chiefs offense and just never let up, because it's the only way that they are actually going to hold them down. Because if they let them, if they let that team, you know, have one of their spurts where they put up something like 28 or 35 points in, you know, in a quarter, you're not going to come back from that.
They need to be smart. They need to have a smart system. They need to have a good system, an even right. system.
Exactly.
And they yeah. and they need to and they need to bite the kneecaps.
Yeah, but the good. Thing that we're all going to be paying attention to more than the actual X's and O's, of course, are one of the things I love to do every year is go through the weird prop bets.
Oh yes.
Oh yes. What are our prop bets this year?
So I'm not going to talk about the ones that are for like the pregame shows.
Before we do that, Zach, I had an idea that I don't want to forget about. I think we should try. We should take their rosters and pick the most unlikely MVP on both teams, like the person that's just like would be this the most amazing miracle if they got it. Like,
you're stealing a Bill Simmons bet.
No. This is the MVP. Like, okay,
that's not the Henry Hynoski.
No, I'm thinking like an offensive tackle. Or,
of course you're not going
to. All right, see, if this was the CFL, we could talk about the most outstanding Canadian. But
we really need one of those.
Maybe we should have that anyways. Are there any Canadians?
I don't think there are enough Canadians, if any.
All right, well, never mind. No, skip it. Go to the prop bets.
All right. I'm skipping the stuff that's like for the pregame show. And how long is the national anthem going to be? Or no, like that's normal stuff. For the during the broadcast of the game itself, from when the official CBS broadcast game broadcast starts, what will be said first, groin or hamstring?
That's a good one. What are the odds?
They're both minus 120. So you have to bet 120 to win 100.
Well, I think that somebody on one of these teams is coming off a groin injury, so I'm going to roll with groin on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have to say groin myself.
I don't know. No, I'm giving a lot of thought to this. Groin. It's groin is the safe bet, but yeah.
I say groin.
Yeah, all right.
Because CBS has a new version of The Equalizer coming out, if you haven't seen.
The Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
Equalizer, yes.
How many times will Queen Latifah be said by Jim Nance? The over-under is 1.5.
Oh. Well, is it debuting after the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, they're way over.
I think it is. Let me double check.
Because, I mean, if the first episode is right after the Super Bowl, then shit, I mean, it's going to be at least, I'd probably say 8 to 10 times minimum.
I was going to go 6.
February 7th, sure. So yeah.
Yeah, no, way over. That's an easy.
If it's gonna be over. I'm not. I don't think it's gonna be as high as 7. I'm gonna say solid 4.
But we're all agreement and over though, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting because 1.5 has the under. The under has lower odds than the over does, which is like you get a higher payout if you bet the over, which is like we're all saying. I think that like. He has to say Queen Latifah, not just The Equalizer, but Queen Latifah. And I think that that's...
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Hold on.
No. I think that she is part of the deal. I think they're going to say it's going to be part of the read.
Yeah, it's going to be part. Yeah, I think I agree with that too. So I'm sticking with the over. Yeah, I think, you know, 4 to 6 times easy.
What is going to be the primary color of Bruce Arians' flat cap? The favorite is red. Coming in the middle, you have white, gray, and then black is the big underdog.
I'm going to say white. He's gonna color coordinate it because they've chosen to wear the white uniforms. So
what's he worn every other week in the playoffs?
I think it's been red usually.
I think it's been red.
I'm going with red. Yeah, these players and coaches are creatures of habit. I'm going with red. They're not going to make if they're staying with the same uniforms, they're not messing with anything. So I'm staying with red.
Yeah, I would say red makes the most sense. I imagine red, yeah.
Yeah, that's why it's the favorite. That probably makes the most sense. Will Tony Romo correctly predict an offensive play?
Yes.
Yes.
More than likely. Yeah, because I mean,
No. Yeah, okay. Because when I was watching the last Chiefs game, the AFC title game, there were a couple times like, oh, Jim, they're going to do this right here. And then they didn't. And I was like, has Tony Romo lost his edge?
Uh-oh.
But
I mean, to be fair, he was surprised by the College Football Hall of Fame induction that he was given.
What?
That game, I think. Yeah,
that's not true, is it?
It is. He's a member of the College Football Hall of Fame.
For what he did in Northern Illinois?
Eastern Illinois.
Also the home of Sean Payton, right?
Sean Payton. There's been several NFL coaches. The guy who coached the Broncos for the longest time, Mike Shanahan. There was the guy who coached the Vikings. It's in, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is from Eastern Illinois. I mean, they've had a few like reasonably. Anyway, but no,
they should petition to join the Big Ten and give Ohio State a run for their money.
No,
they probably beat actual Illinois.
probably.
What will be said first by Tony Romo? In decreasing order of odds, read, penetration, blitz, A-gap, trick play.
I'm going to say trick play.
There's a lot.
I think he breaks out a trick play prediction early.
No, I think Reed has got to be the far and away because I think he's going to go on and be like, Jim, look at the way that Tom Brady reads the defense. I mean, left to right, he goes through his progression so quickly. You got blah, 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 blah. You know, like it's going to be Reed.
I've often wondered, and I think I even heard Al Michaels mention this last time he called the Super Bowl, that they could go out and bet on themselves.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you could win a bunch of money. And you could totally manipulate the whole thing. But anyway, go ahead, Zach.
Over under, how many times will Tony Romo mention his children? The over under is 0.5, so either he does or he doesn't.
I'm going to say he doesn't.
Why would he mention his children?
I didn't even know he had kids, so that gives you an idea.
He has like 3 or 4. Yeah.
I mean, has he routinely done this in his broadcasts?
I guess. Well, the under is the favorite, -500, heavy favorite.
What a weird thing to make a prop. I just don't, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, it seems like such a...
See,
Will LeBron be said during the broadcast?
Is yes, LeBron going to be there? Is he going to be present?
No, LeBron won't be there. He's with the Lakers. They're busy. But it could be comparing, like...
Oh, Tom Brady to LeBron because they're both old and, yeah.
Or LeBron, like, makes a tweet.
Both like, have fake hair.
LeBron is loving this game. And so,
I'm going to say no to that. I mean, LeBron, you know, I know that he's with the Lakers. He's not. I could totally see him like, oh, my calf. I got
to
go
watch the Super Bowl.
I got to go be a frontrunner.
Load management. I need to.
Yeah, no is the overwhelming favorite here at -1,000.
Yeah, I'd have to go with no. Well, wait. Nah, it's not going to happen.
No, yeah, I'm going to say yeah. I'm going to say that he gets mentioned.
Pass. Nah.
There's a whole bunch of these halftime show ones, but I don't know if you guys care about The Weeknd.
Not particularly, no.
Nope. Zero.
Post-game stuff.
Metallica or bust.
That'd be awesome.
I know, right?
Color of the liquid, they can't say Gatorade, color of the liquid poured on the winning coach. Orange, red, pink, yellow, green, lime, purple, clear, or blue.
I don't know why, but for some reason in my mind, it's always like lime, like lemon lime. So, yeah.
That's what I would say, too.
I think it's going to be some shade of red. Like, they'll just have their – not that it's color coordinated, but I just feel like they'll be, you know, the Gatorade punch or whatever it'll be. I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
What group of players will pour the liquid on the coach? Will it be a defensive player or an offensive player, or will it be both?
It'll be LeBron. LeBron will come and dump the Gatorade on him. LeBron and Tony Romo's kids will come and dump the Gatorade on the winner.
There you go.
Whomever wins the MVP, who will they first refer to in their speech? Will they first refer to their teammates, God, the USA, the winning city, family, coaches, or the team owner?
God. It's always God.
God.
I'm going to go with teammates.
Teammates is the favorite. It's only +100, but it's still the favorite.
What am I getting on God? What are my odds on that?
225, +225. Yeah.
I'm sick with teammates.
And I think God's a good bet at 225, but I would have to say teammates too. Yeah.
That's a good bet.
Again, I want to see more players blame God when they lose.
Right.
That'd be awesome if somebody just like thanked weed or something, you know, or like painkillers.
I'd like to thank Vicodin, Totino's pizza rolls, and the system in that order.
Will Disney be said by the MVP?
Well, I don't think so because nobody's going to Disney World this year.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that this year.
Well,
safely go to Disney World when it's open. Well, Disney World is open. Disneyland is not. And they're in Tampa, which is right up the road from Orlando, so...
Well, we may not know that the night of, I think, because usually, so that night we'll probably find out, but it would be like, usually it's after the game in a separate commercial. Because they usually have, like, they basically have the commercial done. They're just waiting to add the players say.
Yeah. I'm going to Disney World.
Man, yeah, I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, did that really just happen? I think it was Phil Simms after Super Bowl 20. And they're like, Phil Simms, you just won the Super Bowl. And he like, looks like the camera and goes, I'm going to Disney World. I'm like, wow, what? And, yeah, because I didn't know it was, like, set up afterwards. I'm like, that's amazing.
But, total times the word difficult is said by Roger Goodell during the postgame presentation.
30.
The over
really, this was a difficult season and difficult times for difficult people, and we got through the difficulty.
I'd say trying is more of the word that's going to be. These are trying. What a trying time.
Unprecedented times, yeah.
They won't. Yeah, go ahead.
The last one that I have here in my favorite one. When Andy Reid is interviewed post game on the field, will the word burger be said by Andy Reid?
Yes.
Even if they lose, do you think so?
No.
Well, he wouldn't be interviewed on the field after the game if he lost.
No, but, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
I think so. Yes. I think burger's going to get in there.
Yeah, that's sure. He'll get burger.
I think that Andy Reid's a real trickster and likes to have a lot of fun. You just don't let
somebody already asked him. Today at media day, like, hey, Andy, if you win, are you going to eat one of those big cheeseburgers you always talk about? And he's like, oh, yeah, if we win, definitely. There's a cheeseburger in my future, I'll tell you what.
There you go.
I wonder if he'll, if he were to
does
lose.
Does he still eat? You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say that son of a bitch eats the cheeseburgers even when they lose. But I don't think he's.
I mean, yes.
That'd be great if he met Bruce Arians in the middle of the field after the game and like handed him a burger from his pocket, like he just had it in his pocket. One of the weirder. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, he's not maintaining that figure, only eating burgers after wins. That's for sure. Okay, what else we got? Anything?
The only other thing I wanted to bring up tonight, and we may not have time for it because of how things normally go when this gets brought up. But we've had a few reverse retro jerseys make the rounds.
Let's do a lightning round real quick. And, like them or not, and be done with it.
I don't have pictures ready. Is there some on the whole mothership?
There's
of like in action.
Oh, we could just check. Yeah. We can just check our text chat. I think they're all there.
Yeah, because there's the Penguins tonight are the fourth team to wear there, so we'll add the Penguins whites. They're on NBCSN right now. But the first team to wear the first two teams to wear theirs played against each other. It was Edmonton and Toronto. Edmonton with the white jerseys with the orange. Accents and Toronto with the blue jerseys with a blue maple leaf and blue numbers and gray accents.
Maple Leafs looked awful, like I thought they would.
Yep.
Fuck them. Edmonton looked all right, but where's my robo sperm?
Edmonton is like replacement level. Like,
yeah,
their normal ones are blue, like white with blue. So it's like, okay, that's good. And you just change the other primary color with the other primary color. It's like, yeah, okay, that's good too. Just, you know, pick one, I guess. It's fine. And then yeah, the Leafs ones are just we all knew that they were going to look bad, but in action they looked even worse than I thought.
They're so dingy and like
they're very very
bitter patter.
If you yeah. Fine. I will say so I just popped over to NHL.com. The Penguins look good in theirs. I like Pittsburgh's.
Yeah, it looks fine. It looks fine. It's nothing like why. It doesn't give you the same reaction that the Minnesota ones did.
Where'd you find it at? Where's it at?
It's on NHL.com. If you scroll down, there's a picture that says, it says live Penguins at Rangers, and there's a shot of the Penguins in
there. Oh, there it is, right there. Okay.
Like when the Wild wore theirs last night, I knew I liked them, and then I like seeing them on the ice with like the arena lighting and against the white background. It really struck me how much they popped. I really love those Minnesota ones, and then these Penguins are like are kind of like this along the same lines as the Oilers one, where it's like, yeah, it's good, it's fine.
I've always just loved the Penguins in the with the diagonal script. I've always liked that look for them, so I'm happy to see it back. And the fact that it's against the Rangers
of all teams, yeah,
I hadn't thought about that myself, but yeah, that's
okay. All right.
Kind of a dumb team to choose to play it against.
Oh wait, Andy's got pictures. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah. So I got a few queued up here. So here's the quick look at the Leafs and the Oilers.
The George Armstrong patch though was quite nice.
Well, the thing that struck me about that is it actually made the jersey look worse because it's like, well, there's white.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole problem. I mean, there's so many problems with this Leafs uniform, but like, what an underwhelming game to kick this concept off. Where like the Leafs have a look that sucks, and the Oilers is kind of like meh.
Yeah, I think as we're seeing, we're getting more of these kind of rolling out every day starting this week. So I'm sure we'll have more to look at next week.
What else we got, Andy?
Here's the Penguins from tonight.
Yeah, I like this. I like it.
Not bad. It's fine.
The helmet sticker looks really bad on the Penguins still, but
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Look at us. We're in the rec league, and we've got
a countdown. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not bad. It's fine. It's a little bland, but I mean, it's fine. It's fine. All right.
Reset the clock and let's move.
Reset the clock. We got 30 seconds.
This one's good. I think as we said in the text chat last night, the only thing is maybe it goes a little too North Stars with the actual stars on the pants.
Mm-hmm.
And when we said when they were unveiled, the block numbers are a little odd, but they just kind of clash with the modern styling of the logo.
The Wild has a really good color scheme already, but this I think is better.
Yeah.
And it really looks good.
The logo looks better in these colors.
The I'm with Zach. The only thing that needs to happen is lose the stars in the pants, and you're good.
Okay.
All right. Well, there we go. Andy, I say the Wild. No, I said my piece. I said my piece on the board. I feel like the Wild should just slowly become the North Stars again and fuck Dallas. You know, that's really all.
Well, I what did you say that Dallas should become again?
The Ghost Recons. Just the Dallas Ghost Recons.
The Ghost Recons.
That's the other thing. That's not a reverse retro, but Dallas finally wore those neon things,
and they look awful.
Some people were digging the shit out of them.
Oh, yeah, no. Those people are dumb and wrong.
No, I guarantee kids love them because anybody that's played NHL on Xbox knows that every team of 13-year-olds all look like that. When they start their own jerseys and crap, they all look neon, and it's just – it's gross. And so when I turned it on, it was on NHL Network, and I was looking at it, and I'm like, it feels like I turned on my Xbox. That's what it feels like. Objectively, it's probably not good. But I also think, like, if I was 15 and I was a Dallas Stars fan, I think those were the sickest jerseys in the league, probably.
The fact that that game that they wore those the same night that the Canadians played the Flames.
Oh my God! Yeah.
And as Andy said, quote, "One is a masterwork; the other is Uncle Bubba's ice rodeo."
Again, like, the Stars wore them against the Red Wings, so it's just even more stark of like, this is what a classic look looks like, and this is what Mountain Dew looks like.
Yeah.
Kyle Moore actually tweeted us that. Best jersey matchup of the season. It was Flames Habs.
It struck me too.
It's like so beautiful.
I said it's definitely in the running. My only, if I had one, and I don't normally do this with my jersey matchups because these are just two fantastic jerseys, and that's that. But the red on red is the only thing I would have a problem with, and I don't really have a problem with it. But
look,
beautiful uniforms.
I'm looking forward to the Leafs wearing their normal non-ass uniforms against the Flames.
That's the Scotia Cup, Mike.
That's the Scotia Cup. Yeah, okay. The Scotia Division.
I gotta say, no, because nobody else says them, and so it does bother me when I turn on NHL Network and they're like, "Well, let's pick up the standings in the Scotia North." Like, ugh.
Yeah,
that looks better. That the Reds work better. Those are two beautiful hockey uniforms, man.
That's just pretty.
But again, you go to the NHL's website and you're like, oh no, oh,
so pick
God,
Uncle Bubba's Ice Rodeo. There you go.
Oh, that makes me throw up just a bit.
All right, we're safe again. All right, everyone.
Okay, but no, just if you go to the NHL's website and you're like, oh, I'm going to check the standings, the sponsorships are in are on the site. It's like, oh, I'm going to check the division standings. It's not the East. It's the Mass Mutual East, and it's
they paid the money. So it is what it is. But again, nobody anywhere else except for on NHL properties, whether it's the website or the network, refer to them as anything other than what they are. Just say in the West, in the East, not in the Mass Mutual East.
The Caps haven't worn their new reverse retros yet, have they?
No, they haven't worn reverse retros. They wore the third jerseys last week.
The blue ones, the navy ones. We haven't seen those badass red ones that they have, right?
Not yet. I forgot. They put out their schedule. Well, most of these teams have put out their uniform schedules already. So,
yeah, Edmonton wearing those.
The Ducks are only scheduled to wear theirs twice, where some teams are wearing them like five times. So, but those are only home games. So I don't know if the Ducks are going to wear it on the road somewhere, but very disappointing.
They're not having any fans at games, right? The Ducks, you're not able to go. Or
no, anything. There's only three teams in the entire league that currently have fans.
Let me guess. The Panthers, the Lightning.
Uh-huh. Nope.
No?
Lightning were going to, and then they changed their mind.
Okay, so the Panthers, it's got to be the Stars.
Yep. Carolina? Hurricanes?
Nope.
No?
Arizona.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Arizona, Dallas, and Florida. Tampa, the arena had fans for the first few Raptors games, but then I guess as COVID kind of was raising back up again in the Tampa area, the Lightning decided, no.
Yeah, I actually had tickets to a Raptors game that I couldn't go to because they canceled attendance. So neither the Raptors or the Lightning are letting fans into the arenas. The arena.
I do love what I've caught little bits of some of the Lightning games, and they like point up to the rafters, and there's a there's still the Raptors banner just up in the rafters of the
Lightning arena. Pretty funny.
All right. 22,000 at the Super Bowl on Sunday, guys. That'll be
Most of it's like healthcare workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what you're gonna, you know, they're telling us these numbers, and then I think they secretly doubled them because that Packers Bucks game, there was no way there was only 22,000 people at that game. Just no way.
No way.
I think it's full. They're gonna have a bunch of like executives and their families all dressed up in scrubs and shit, just pretending to be first responders. And
oh, before we go, Zach, what was Toby mad about today? I bet you I can tell you which episode it was. Just tell me what he was mad about.
Oh, it was they were changing the foreign policy language in a speech.
Oh, okay, yeah, that was
with Will Bailey.
With Will Bailey. Oh, that's okay. That's part one of Over There, I think.
Yeah, it's the inauguration. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, yeah.
I need to watch West Wing. I've watched like five episodes. Yeah, it was really good, but Aaron Sorkin just has I need like a break from Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. No, I get it. My girlfriend and I are she watched the majority of like the first three seasons. I had never seen it. So we were watching through the whole thing together. And it's certainly a thing where like we watch it in spurts. We'll watch like maybe 2 or 3 days in a row, and then we'll say, "All right, let's."
Yeah, you can't. It's a tough binge watch because it's just
overwhelming with dialogue.
It's like getting shot at with a machine gun for like 5 days.
Yeah,
a verbal machine gun.
And I mean, you know, between that, The Newsroom, The Social Network. I mean,
I love and hate The Newsroom all at the same time.
Same here.
Yeah,
am I the only one who just likes it?
I like it. The thing that drives me bonkers about that show is the like revisionist shit that they do, where it's like, well, it's basically Aaron Sorkin saying, well, if I was covering the death how did the news networks miss this? It's like, because we were living in real time.
And then the one mistake they make is like this catastrophic fucking thing that there's no way that something that obvious would have gotten past all those people. No way.
Like it is well written, it's well acted, it's well performed. I like almost everything about it. But sometimes Sorkin, as he's known to do, gets a little preachy, and particularly in The Newsroom, he gets preachy in a revisionist sense.
Yeah,
where you're just like, you're not taking into account what it was actually like.
Yeah, if you want to see peak preachy Aaron Sorkin, watch Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
You mean the West Wing on Hollywood and Vine?
It was, it's basically, it's him trying to do the West Wing, but it's at Saturday Night Live instead of the White House.
I haven't got a chance to watch his Netflix movie, The Trial of Chicago 7.
I haven't either. I haven't seen that. But Studio 60 is like, Danny got busted for coke. What are we going to do with the media? We'll have a press conference. Like, oh, for fuck's sake, really?
No, Trial of Chicago 7 was not bad. I enjoyed it. It was one of those to where I didn't quite realize. It's one of those – it's weird because I watched it and I was like, that was pretty good. That felt like a Sorkin movie. Then I checked it again. I was like, oh, fuck, that was a Sorkin. And then if I watched a few scenes from it again, I'm like, oh, God, like it's totally Aaron Sorkin. I just didn't even put it together. And now I can't unsee it or unhear it, you know?
Right.
Another one of his movies, I don't think – I know he had a part in it. I don't know if he wrote the whole thing, but Charlie Wilson's War. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That I didn't know it. I'm watching him go, man, this sounds a lot like Sorkin. And then he dropped it. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's two YouTube videos called Sorkinisms where they do all of his references across all these movies and TV shows and stuff. And I heard one. I'm like, this has got to be Sorkin. So I stopped and looked it up. And sure enough.
Now, The Newsroom would have been so much better.
He goes, it's one of the characters goes, and I never get sick at seeing it. I'm like, that is fucking Aaron Sorkin right there. Right there for sure. But. Yep. Yeah.
Say The Newsroom would have been so much better if they just did their own news stories instead of referencing real life stuff.
And if they weren't all like perfect fucking angels, you know, like the absolute pinnacle of journalistic integrity, which bullshit.
It came out with like this really big like Jeff Daniels, unpredictable response on an interview program, and it's like really interesting, really enticing. It's like, whoa, man, you just like came out with the truth bomb, and I'm
that's
like, totally
what America is.
Yeah, then you watch it, and you're like, this is just fellating itself. This entire series is just blowing itself.
And second, secondly, there is no way on God's green earth that a network show that was doing as well as Atlantis Cable or whatever it was called,
ACN, yeah.
That was like number two behind Fox was ever going to go, you know what, fuck the ratings, we're just going to crater them, we don't care what happens, we're doing real news. That just does not happen in a multi-million-dollar corporation. It never happens. No way. And that was a part I had a problem with, too.
And the real news, quote-unquote.
Yeah. If every news story had influenced voters, Florida Man wouldn't even be a thing. And I can't have a world like that.
I'm just going to maintain, I liked it.
I liked it, too. I loved it. Yeah.
You could watch the newsroom from beginning and enjoy it while at the same time making a slow masturbation motion with your hand the entire episode long. You know, it's like, I'm enjoying this, but man, just what a
I loved it too, Mike, but I worked in that industry and so does Zach, and we know bullshit when we see it. You know?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to switch to something else.
No, I was going to as well, so you go ahead.
Oh. Well, the Pittsburgh Penguins and Carolina Hurricanes had an interesting Twitter interaction just now about jerseys. The Penguins put up their tweet of like, our reverse retro sweaters are fire. And so the Carolina Hurricanes quote tweeted that said, bold move wearing these against the inventors of the diagonal lettering.
Nice.
The Pittsburgh Penguins account responded, bold move to steal the Quiznos logo.
Oh. That's yeah. The
good. Good. Fuck the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, why don't you wear your Whalers? And it's funny because
didn't the Hurricanes just introduced their diagonal letter jersey last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, the redneck Canes. Remember?
Yeah, the redneck Rangers and redneck that Rangers, one guy got very upset that I called them the redneck Rangers.
That's offensive to rednecks.
Well, too bad.
Well, hey, did you guys make any money selling GameStop stock?
No, I don't even understand it. I know that they're doing a short squeeze, but that's just me like parroting what I read somewhere. I know how shorts work. I just don't know how this works. I kind of do, but
basically the idea was that like GameStop was selling at like $13, and this hedge fund for some reason was got a tip that this hedge fund was unloading all of this GameStop stock. So this Reddit board all got together and they all fiercely bought it up all at once, which shot the price way the hell up. And so when the hedge fund has to get those stocks back, they then have to pay it at the higher price. So they were going to lose like $17 billion in a day.
It's very much a win for the little guys, but it's kind of become perverted a little bit and brought out some really ugly parts of both humanity and just the market.
It's really one of those things where it's like, oh man, like I wish I had, known of this as it was happening, you know?
Sure. It's like
a couple bucks off of it.
Well, some guy,
what's that, Greg?
One guy's portfolio went from like $15,000 or something to like $27 million in a span of a few days. I don't know what the
minimum buy is on the stock. I mean, it's not like you could have bought. I mean, you may have been able to. I don't know, but generally, like people like us, are like, well, I'll buy 10 shares and then I'll cash out. I think you got to buy more than that. Sometimes
the GameStop, when it opened, it was like $13.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is we couldn't say, okay, we're each going to buy a share at $13 each, and that'll be, $52.
You can't buy one, but like –
yeah, you have to buy like 50 or 100 or whatever, you know.
But the idea is that even if you had to buy it in bulk, like say you had to buy 100 shares,
you're still only $1,500 or $1,300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would that be? It went from like 13 or 15 to 300 or 400.
No, the full trajectory was $6.40 all the way up to like $3.46 a share.
Yeah.
So it was a crazy astronomical increase. Right.
But then the problem is like the thing stopped trading. Like Robinhood canceled some of these trades, and so then people started selling, and then the value started to go down again. And I don't know. It's one of those things where like. Had I been involved, like had I known about this, I totally would have done it like the day of. And then even if you just cash out at the end of the one day, like I wouldn't have stuck through the whole end and be like, you know what? I made $X hundred thousand today. I think I'm gonna achieve that and be okay with my life and not like, you know, not worry that like, oh no, I could have stuck with it for another couple of days. Because the problem is like all the people jumping on it for the meme.
Yeah, I just sent you that, guys.
Yeah. The problem is the people that are jumping in for the meme don't realize that like stock value does not equal company value. So GameStop is not going to exist in like 2 years.
Well, the part of it too was that GameStop had a couple of good things happen. I forget who was it, the guy, Michael Burry from the guy's famous from the movie The Big Short. He was the guy that basically cashed in on shorting the housing market back in 2008. But he liked a couple things he saw with GameStop, so he kind of talked it up. And then some other guy came along and talked it up. And all of a sudden, the Wall Street Bets Reddit thread was all over it. And it just off we went. So, but I'd heard that what the big problem that that Melvin Capital had was that there were more – that there wasn't enough stock out there available for them to cover the shorts. Like they had shorted it so much that like there wasn't enough to buy back to even cover – what they shorted, something along those lines. I don't know. I'm hardly a, you know, I don't know if the first thing about this shit, but.
Neither does anyone else that's involved in this shit. They're just buying into the meme.
Yeah, good for them. I mean, you know, I'm happy to see a hedge fund take it in the teeth. I have no problem with that because after what they did to us with the financial crisis of 2008 and the housing market and all that, fuck them.
Fuck them.
You know, take them down, man. Put some of that money back in our pockets. You know, not ours, literally, but, you know. Let the little guy win some money.
Good tweet I saw. Pandemic day 25. I made bread, smiley face.
Right.
Pandemic day number 95. I sure do miss my friends. Day 310. The Congress appears to be under the control of a shirtless man in a Viking helmet.
I saw
this. Day 330. Reddit's coordinated attack on Wall Street is going as planned. It's like, what has happened?
This is what happens, baby. When you keep people inside and they have nothing else to do.
Yeah. You know, I was surprised this was going on.
Wall Street thing, like, people were sitting inside. They were saving a whole bunch of money. And so you have a bunch of dumb millennials that are like, you know what? I don't need this money. Let me go do it for a meme. And here we are.
You know what? I would have taken my stimulus check and dumped every bit of it into it if I'd known what was going on.
I know. I had a couple of friends that circulate on the Reddit stock forums. And so they knew about it. They made a little bit of money. But
there's a great there's a great webcomic from Cyanide Happiness, which features a man in a time machine who zaps out of a time warp and reaches into the trash can and discovers that it's September 10th, 2001. And he goes, there's still time. And then he runs over and he invests all of his money in Apple.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's true. It's like, God.
I mean, okay. People invested
in Apple at like 1984 or whatever. You got to be real pretty happy with yourself right about that.
Yeah. As cold as it is, instead of if I went back in time to September 10th, 2001, I'm not buying stock in Apple. I'm buying stock in Halliburton.
Oh, Halliburton. Oh, Halliburton. Three things, Mike. Halliburton, any publicly traded waste removal site or company, and bottled water.
And bottled water, and I'm writing a sticky note to remind myself in 7 years to put some money in this new Bitcoin thing.
Yeah. We're evil hardest bastards, you and me. Look at that.
Like,
there's one guy that like bought like $1,000 worth of Bitcoin when it first opened up, but he put it aside because he didn't think it was something to like worry about. Mm-hmm. But now his investment is worth like $27 million. And the way the Bitcoin account works, like you can only try to log into your account like 10 times. And if you misdo the password, like you lose. If you go through it all, you can't sign into it ever again. So he's got like 4 attempts left.
Oh man,
what password do I use?
That's such bullshit. That's so cruel to that poor person.
It really is, yeah.
But
wow.
I was just gonna wrap things up a little bit, but if you had a final point, go ahead.
Well, I just want to know if anybody has watched the first 4 episodes now of WandaVision.
I have.
I've watched the first 2.
Okay. keep on it, Mike.
Yeah, stay on it. We'll get to it.
It's weird, and episode three is still weird.
But it's worth it.
Episode four just kind of
okay. That's when
we go next level.
Because I don't know. It was like after two episodes, I was like, I can see what they're aiming at. Like, obviously, this is not real. Like, this, yeah. Like, there's something going on.
If you're somebody that has enjoyed the MCU films, anybody out there, if you've enjoyed the MCU films and you watch the first two episodes, and you're like, oh, this is what they're doing. Please watch through episode four.
If you go
through four episodes and then you say, yeah, it's still not for me. Okay. That's fine. I get it. But if you go through the fourth episode and you're either out or you're in at this point. Because it's sold its purpose.
So I watched the first episode and I liked the whole, like, I Love Lucy-ness of it all. But then halfway through episode two, I was like, this is kind of getting old already, but I'll stick with it.
That's exactly why they released the first two episodes at the same time, I think. Mm-hmm. Because they were like, if we strung this out over as many weeks as we want to, mm-hmm. we're going to lose people. Stay with it. Get to episode four, and then you can.
And then make your decision. Yep, I'll say the same thing. All right, Andy, what was your last thought?
I say, hopefully, our fortunes will favor us as we will talk to Chris Creamer and Paul Lucas here in a couple weeks.
Can we invest in CCSLC stock?
Yeah. I don't think they're publicly traded yet. That's cool. I'm ready. I'm excited to talk to those two guys and kind of get an idea of what their podcast is like and what they're going to talk about on their show. So, yeah, stay tuned for that.
Cool. All right. And with that, we will call it a night. We'll talk to you next week. Go over the Super Bowl, I suppose, and all the other good stuff. So,
if we must, yes.
In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports. Subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasting is sold. I'm going to kind of like vamp a little bit here so I can get the clothes ready to play.
Well, Andy, just be glad we didn't get to the baseball thing I wanted to talk about next week, but I'm sure you're going to love talking about it next week just as much as you would this week.
What baseball thing?
Nolan Arenado.
Yeah.
Oh.
Came to the Cardinals for
Jesus.
Nothing.
And they've also got a proposal on the table that for 154 game season and expanded playoffs, which I think the union is going to say fuck you to. So we'll see.
The union is saying fuck you to everything that the league is putting out there. So
and I'm sure that there's like somebody besides me out there in the podcast versus excited about the fact that Daytona Speed Week start next week. So I might be the only one, but I'm excited. All right. Anything else, boys?
Nope. I'm good.
All right. We will see y'all next time.
Latest.